So one of the great strengths of supercars is the quality of the coverage, of course, and that in no small part is due to the likes of Mark Scaife and Greg Murphy and, of course, Neil Crompton. Having been behind the wheel, Crompton twice made the podium at Bathurst and then shifted behind the microphone, which is why his book is called The Best Seat in the House. Neil Crompton's with us. Morning to you.
Very good morning to you, Mike.
So, Neil, just a bit over a week away in Sydney, you excited about the return of the season?
Oh, very much so. I can't believe how long it's been. It just seems like an eternity. It's been such a stop-start process through 2020 and now 2021. In all honesty, it's like a foggy mess in my head. So trying to untangle what happened last year and the nature of it, and then the same this year. But it'll be brilliant to go motor racing again. It's a little less than ideal in some respects that we've got to go to the same venue over and over, but I'd much prefer to be going racing than just theorising about it.
Tell you what, the sacrifice those teams make, you know, the distances they got to travel, the borders they need to cross at certain times, depending on the lockdowns and levels and stuff like that, and that's before, you know, you get to the size of Australia. It's an extraordinary passion that drives that, isn't it?
It's incredible. We're very fortunate in this sport, not only in this country, but in New Zealand and around the world. It's happening in spite of itself sometimes, isn't it, Mike? You know, you think about that statement you've just made, the amount of time that normal people spend away from their families and from away, in some cases, from their businesses, to be on the road last year, for example, to make it all happen was truly extraordinary. In fact, we're in the middle here in my office at the moment of participating in the making of a documentary about the Walkinshaw Andretti United team, who had some great success last year and were building up the team from a low base once again, having to go through the whole sort of get up on their feet and get started and get going and become competitive again. And there's a huge focus on just the impact on the families in that process, because it was months and months away. It sounds cheap and easy to roll it off the tongue. Doing it's a whole other thing.
Exactly. Speaking of which, given the gap in the season, I mean, it was interrupted last year, of course. Given the gap in the season, how easy is it, do you reckon, to simply fill the car with petrol and start driving?
It's a really good question, and it's something that I've stopped to think about, because I've already started my prep for next weekend's event. And I reckon it's harder than everybody imagines, because there's a cadence to what you do in a race team, whether you're in the admin or management or marketing, whether you're a driver, whether you're a mechanic, whether you're an engineer, whether you're further down the supply chain. There's a method and a process that you very much become a part of, and it becomes part of your daily life. And really, there kind of almost isn't a season these days. It runs right through the year, other than the forced holidays that they take over the Christmas period. So to completely stop that, to jam the handbrake on and to go flatline for so many months, means there'll probably be a few mistakes. I think there'll be some errors. There'll be people having to overcome a bit of rust to understand how to get back in the saddle, and that'll apply from the drivers all the way down, which probably makes a better show for us.
Talk about your book, Best Seat in the House. I mean, how lucky are you? I mean, it's one thing to drive and love cars, of course, but it's another thing to make a whole life out of it the way you have. How lucky are you?
Very, is the short, sharp answer to that question. I pinch myself sometimes, Mike, because really, like a lot of people with this caper, you start out just as a hardcore fan and you love it and you dare to dream that you might make a living out of it. And so far, I've got to the ripe young age of 61 and I'm trying really hard to get to the end without having a real job. So far, so good. So I love it. It's everything in my life. Everything that goes on in and around my life is to do with the sport. And look, it has its days. Anybody that knows me or anybody that can stop and think about the common sense aspect of it knows that you're going to have good, bad and indifferent along the way. But at the core of it, you love the sport. That's why you do it.
But then at 61, so everyone, you know, going well seemingly, and then this diagnosis. Talk me through that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock to the system. And I've had friends and colleagues. In fact, one's probably listening now, my good friend Steve Horn over on Waiheke Island. He's one of your regular listeners, and he went through it. So it's something that you're not ever ready for. Blokes don't want to talk about it. It actually came about for a couple of reasons, and I'll simplify the story. I'm a tightwad, so I was wasting money on a life insurance policy that was too expensive and needed to wind the cost down, which means you needed a medical for that process. And I got a passion for race cars, go figure. So I wanted to go and drive one of the supercars earlier in the year, and I didn't want the Wheaties packet license. I wanted the real deal. I wanted to reinstate what I previously had, which also required a medical test. And between those two tests is when they found this problem. And, you know, to begin with, it comes as a pretty sobering message when I took the phone call on the Friday at Simmons Plains Raceway in Tasmania as we were preparing for the weekend's broadcast, and then on the other end of the phone someone tells you you've got cancer, it definitely puts a handbrake in your world. And it came as a heck of a shock, but fortunately, you know, great team of medical people who guided me through it and have got me out the other side, and touching wood as I speak to you, so far so good.
Because I'm watching the coverage, you know, like every other supercar fan, you're there and then you're not there. And so at that point, what's happening for you? Are you fearful? Do they fill you with the reassuring words, we get there early enough and you'll be fine and all of that?
I'd love to lie to you and give you the PR answer, but the truth is they fill you with reassuring words, but then right down the bottom there's a tiny little asterisk. It's about a 3 font and you need your binoculars to be able to read it, and it says maybe. So you hold your breath. There's a pretty strong likelihood that you'll pop out the other side. I had an operation, a robotic surgery, and there's a pretty strong likelihood that you'll be okay, but there is some chance that you will not be, and it depends on what they find when they get in there and whether or not the cancer's made it outside into other areas of your body. And that doesn't necessarily mean game, set, match either, but it means there's more invasive treatment to come. So for me, I was lucky. Once they got in there, they found that it was able to be contained, and they took the appropriate steps to remove the bits that needed to be removed. And here I am, you know, back at work and looking forward to getting back in amongst it in the supercar universe again. But I'd be lying to you if I said that, you know, you think you're going to skate out the other side unscathed. And certainly if you're normal, you take pause with what that means. And I like to pride myself on being a reasonably organised person. So I got organised in case that wasn't the situation, but luckily that didn't happen.
Do you reckon it made any difference because of where you've been? In other words, you know, you take risks in terms of driving a car, racing a car, and face death. Does that make it any difference or not?
I don't think so. Do you mean in terms of race driving?
Yeah.
No, funny, I've got a strange attitude to it. Maybe some of the listeners will think it's strange. I don't regard racing a car as being particularly dangerous. I know you'll think I'm crazy because clearly they're a pretty amazing device and they're very, very fast. But if you stop and think about, say, and I'll talk specifically about supercars. There's 24 of them out there at the moment. They're all bright young athletes, and we've been lucky enough to have some great female athletes in there as well as some very talented males. They're all largely pointing in the same direction. They've got a purpose-built machine. The circuit that they operate on is designed in such a way that it's ready to catch mistakes and deal with it. There are marshals and fire marshals and people that intervene if something goes wrong. So you've got all these things on your side. Doesn't mean that you're completely impervious to something going wrong, but you've got a lot more going in your favour. Now, when I drive home, it's a beautiful day in Sydney here this morning, but if I were to drive home later this afternoon and it's dark and rainy and horrible, and the only thing that separates the two of us in opposing directions is a bit of painted white line, I reckon that's dangerous. I'd much rather take my chances on the racetrack, thanks.
All right. By the way, Neil, what chance Greg Murphy at Bathurst do you think if he makes it?
Well, I hope he can make it. I spoke to him last week and we all want him to be there, and I was teasing him about it, and we're old mates, and you know, we've been through a lot together on the racetrack and also in the commentary box and in the broadcast. I mean, he's a great veteran of the sport. He's a great ambassador. He's a proud Kiwi. And, you know, we're all in reverence for what he did at Mount Panorama. So he'll definitely add a dimension. I just hope that the situation allows him, from a travel perspective, to be able to get over here with Richie Stanaway and to be able to do what he does best. And great that he can have the opportunity through Peter Adderton, Erebus and Boost Mobile to be able to do that. And he's working hard on his fitness, and I'm sure he'll do a great job. And in fact, it was a few years ago that we drove a McLaren together down south and had a bit of a ball together. And, you know, he hasn't been doing a huge amount of racing recently, but how cool is it that he can come back and have a crack? I certainly hope that's what the case will be.
Exactly. Now, listen, let me bounce my Shane Van Gisbergen theory off you. So when we had Mark Scaife on the program right a while back, he completely disagreed with me. So my argument's this. Van Gisbergen is a better driver than McLaughlin. And I know that McLaughlin, where he's gone, how well he's doing, how brilliant he is, I get all of that. But have we not watched Shane Van Gisbergen overtake too many people on too many tracks, do too many things too many times that no one else can do, thus making him a better overall driver?
I don't know that I would go so far as to say that I disagree with him. Made me laugh when you said that Scaife disagreed with you because he's been doing that with me for 30 years. But I think they're very level pegging in their ability to drive a race car. and you obviously watch them both at close quarters. I mean, Shane's a magnificent racing driver, but so is Scott. And in fact, you know, one of the things that I'm missing in 2021 is the yin and yang and the offset nature of what each provide to the other. So even though there were times where there was probably, hatred would be too strong a word, but intense rivalry between the two, I think what happens when you take one of those rivals away is you sort of long for their disappearance, and that'll be going on. I actually had a conversation with Scott just last week for television, and he said as much, that his racing with Shane's turned out to be a highlight. And I think as he becomes a greyer beard, like somebody like myself, he'll probably think that that's the case. But I don't know that I'd rank Shane as head and shoulders above. I think there are different days where either one gets the upper hand over the other, but I'm in awe of what they've both done. Like, for example, that New Zealand Grand Prix victory of Shane's at the beginning of the year, that was a freak show. I mean, that was just a freak show. What he did at Sandown with busted bones earlier this year when he made the comeback after he endoed on the mountain bike, that's freak show stuff. So, I mean, he's in the special, he's in the elite. I would say that the two of them rank as global best examples of racing drivers. So forget about what it means across the pond and across the Tasman here and in New Zealand. But I think that if you measure their skill set against any in the world, they come up as A-graders.
Yeah, good answer. Now, what do you reckon? Who wins this year?
Shane's going to win it, unless he finds some way to hurt himself again. He's probably already had one of those scares, and he's done with that for 2021. But Shane's going to win it, deservingly so. He's done an amazing job, 11 victories so far out of 19 races, big pile of podiums. You know, he's got it all going on. The great shame in one sense for me with Shane is, what next? You know, does he keep on just piling on the wins and the poles and the championships and Bathurst victories, or is there something else out there? I know, for example, that Steve Hallam, an Englishman who works these days in the US for Toyota, is a huge fan and opened lots of doors for Shane in his GT racing career. And you know, somewhere along the line, I'd love to see the brilliance of Shane bob up in other places. But equally, I wouldn't be that keen, selfishly speaking, to keep exporting these guys off into other parts of the world. It's bad enough that McLaughlin's gone, because we've half-claimed him as one of ours now, you see.
You always do that. Now, good luck in the coming weekend. Good luck for the book. Lovely to talk. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Look forward to it. Give us a call anytime.
You bet. All right, Neil. Neil Crompton, the book is Best Seat in the House.